The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a really good show for you today. In corroboration with what's going on in Israel, we have on this half hour Dr. Ziva Kornweiser, who has written a book, Living Beyond Terrorism, Israel's Stories of Hope and Healing. We have lots of really good a cappella music. Yes, next couple of weeks, it's a cappella as we are in what is known as the 3 weeks. We may talk about that this week. The portion of the week is Matos, is chapter 29 and following in the book of it's Masai, is chapter 31. To the end of the book, we finish the book of Numbers this week. We have a pretty flipped out story at the end of the show. You're going to want to listen to that one. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Hamas, an Islamic Jihad, drafted a ceasefire offer that would involve a 10-year truce with Israel. The terrorists want all crossings into Gaza opened, an international airport in Gaza, the Rafah crossing to be opened to international traffic, that's the one between Egypt and Gaza, the withdrawal of IDF tanks from areas they entered in Operation Protective Edge, a complete removal of the blockade on Gaza, an international seaport, no more flights by Israel aircraft over Palestinian territory, and expansion of a fishing zone to 10 kilometers from the shoreline. There's no official confirmation of the offer, and it's being greeted as more of a trial balloon than an actual effort offer, and things are still really hot and heavy going on in Gaza. IDF soldiers captured 13 terrorists trying to enter Israel through a tunnel from southern Gaza. This tunnel sparked the IDF to enter into a ground offensive in Gaza. The tunnel was one of several the IDF recently uncovered that were being used to smuggle terrorists into Israeli cities. Two rockets fired from the Sinai hit Eilat. 13 people were lightly wounded. The Sinai-based Salafist group Ansar Bayat al-Maqdis claimed responsibility. The Israeli Air Force bombed several targets in Kinetra, Syria. I never heard of the place. But following rocket shot into the Golan Heights, between 4 and 12 people were reported killed in the airstrike. Exact numbers varied among news outlets reporting the story. A subcommittee of the United States Senate approved an amendment to the 2015 national budget to include financial aid to roughly $621 million to go to Israel to further develop the Iron Dome missile system. This legislation is expected to pass in a vote in the Senate and join together with a similar proposal made in the House. Violent protests broke out in the Israeli embassies in Istanbul and Ankara. Demonstrators threw rocks at the embassy while waving pro-Palestinian flags. Most of Israel's diplomatic staff left Turkey. Finally, a synagogue in Paris was attacked by anti-Israeli mob. The terrorists threw stones and rocks, breaking the windows. Paris police did little to stem the violence. The next day, a mob attacked another synagogue in Paris. This time, the worshippers attacked the mob, driving them away. The mob later returned. Police arrested 12 terrorists. Fighting broke out between rival demonstrations in Boston, Los Angeles, Chicago, and New York. Police separated the groups in each instance. No arrests were made. The Consul General last week asked me, why is it that there's no demonstrations in Detroit? And I said, because in Detroit we don't demonstrate, we write checks, which seems pretty much true. And there really is no place in Detroit to demonstrate anyway. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman, here you are, listening to the Jewish Hour. We have on the line Detroit's own Ziva Kornweiser, has written a book, Living Beyond Terrorism, Israeli Stories of Hope and Healing. How are you today, Ziva?
I'm good, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for coming on. And the book, even though it was written about the Second Intifada, seems to be coming right in target right now, what's going on with the events in Gaza these last few weeks and currently as we speak. This book took you a long time to write. Could you tell us, what was it that piqued your interest in survivors of terrorism?
Well, I actually started with stories of my family and stories of Holocaust survivors in my family, and trying to understand how they became extraordinary people is how I define them. And I went to Israel during the start of the Second Intifada on a solidarity mission, and I saw that same kind of strength, that same kind of ability to cope and move forward. And I wanted to understand that.
Okay, very interesting. And how long did it take you to collect all this information for this book?
I started collecting these stories in 2004. Completed the initial study, which was a doctoral study, in 2006. In 2007, I went back and collected more stories, followed up with the people. And at that point, I wanted to understand the impact of the Lebanon war that was going on. And then subsequently, before the book was published in 2013, I went back and asked the people again how they were, what was happening in their lives. So it's really been an ongoing journey and opportunity to learn from these people.
Okay, so you've been following these same people for almost a decade then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, you make a distinction. I think this is a classic distinction between the word victim of terrorism versus survivor of terrorism. Could you explain the difference, please, Ziva?
It's an attitudinal distinction. It's how people visualize or see themselves or feel about themselves. So a victim or victimization is woe is me, here's what happened to me, and how that can change into an attitude of, I'm a survivor, I'm not a victim of terror. I've been able to move alongside the pain and the anguish and really survive.
Mm-hmm. Very often we think of people who have been in any type of a thing, like we were talking about suicide bombings and pizza places and on buses and et cetera, of post-traumatic stress syndrome. Did you find that the people that you interviewed were suffering from that, even though it's just a one-time thing, whereas we usually think, like, you know, people who are in Vietnam and people who are in Iraq and Afghanistan, they were subject to it for long periods of time. What did you find with people who are just exposed to one bomb, which is more than one any bombs I want to experience?
Yeah, it's life-changing. Yes, many do suffer from the symptoms of post-traumatic stress, recurring nightmares, anxiety, fear for the next time, fear for their family. Yet what I was trying to understand was how, alongside of that, they could also move forward. They could also experience something we call resilience. How could they bounce back? And those who can go even further and grow, which is something we call post-traumatic growth. But that doesn't mean the distress isn't still there. It doesn't mean those feelings, those memories are there, but it's as they told me, moving with it, moving alongside it.
Mm-hmm. Did you find people that over the course of the times were still victims and not survivors?
Yes, there were people who I described as still living the attack. Those that still were stuck, and yet, even those people, I heard the hope. I heard what helped them. How they appreciated other people coming and helping them and supporting other, meeting with other survivors. So yes, while they may still have been stuck, still experiencing it, there were those sparks.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, just back up. I mean, I don't want to go through like gore in detail, but the there are people that I know, survivors, that are very withdrawn and they're not really interested in talking about it. And then there are people who are real, you should probably say some blabbermouths, and that's really all they talk about. Mm-hmm. Did you come across this type of distinction when dealing with people who survived acts of terror in Israel as well, Ziva?
Yes, there is the full spectrum, but what I was trying to do was give them an opportunity to share their story, to help them process the both cognitively what their experience was and their emotions and their feelings, and I was there to listen. And sometimes, even those who don't want to speak, that's all it takes, is an empathic listener, a sensitive ear. So, you know, I'm passionate about giving people that opportunity.
Okay.
We learn from Holocaust survivors that sometimes that could take decades. Sometimes it never could happen, but that ability to do that helps people come out.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel that by your interviewing? First of all, let's go back up before we talk about the people that you interviewed. How did you find the people to interview? Does one just like say put an ad in a newspaper? I'm looking for people to interview who survived a terrorist, a terrorist situation.
Actually, that was one of the ways.
I was actually joking, but you actually did that.
I put an ad in the Jerusalem Post. But really, most of it was through personal contacts, through family and friends. I have family there. I have friends there. And then through the trauma community. It was when I was doing this work, it was the Second Intifada. I met people in the trauma community, and they welcomed me.
Okay, let me stop you right there. Trauma community. Could you explain that, please?
So, mental health professionals who were working with trauma survivors or victims or helping them in the moment. I mean, these were... sometime researchers, but in at that time they were all working with interventions, helping people deal with what they were experiencing then and there. But they understood that it was also important to look at the bigger picture and to look beyond that and to look at resilience building and what makes people grow and thrive. So they welcomed my presence there and supported me. The first interviews I did were actually done with Professor Ellie Summer from the University of Haifa. And from there, it was a snowball effect. If somebody wanted to be interviewed, I'd cross the country to be there and listen.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Now, you put forth various principles for dealing with the struggle of a survivor. Could you explain some of those coping techniques, please, Ziva Kornweiser?
Yes. Ultimately, I interviewed 48 people who either survived terrorism or were family members of the bereaved. They were Jewish, Christian, Muslim, and Druze. And across that, I looked at discovered 12 different qualities that people possessed or ways of coping.
Were these common to everybody, or people had some of them and you realized that this is what was like the sum total of coping techniques?
Yeah, it was as I call it, a vivid description of how a theme that came out of those who were resilient, those who were able to move forward in their lives. Things like drawing on their core values and beliefs, who they were, what their life experiences were before, how they reacted to other situations in their life, their religious attitudes, their spirituality, their inner strength.
Mm-hmm. Just
that captured quite a lot of the themes in that piece. Another important one was their ability to be creative, to think beyond the moment, to see the silver lining, never to be able to say, "Oh, the event was what caused me to blossom or to do something altruistic in my life," but it was as a result of their struggle. Here's what they were able to do. It was a change in the attitude. It was how they were able to respond, not what the disaster was itself, but how they responded to the disaster.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you're just tuning in, our guest is Ziva Kornweiser. She's written the book Living Beyond Terrorism, Israeli Stories of Hope and Healing. We're talking about surviving terrorism. The word survivor is also used for people who have cancer, and one of the things I hear from survivors is that it made them aware of importance and triviality. And like the people who wanted to do something their whole lives, suddenly now after they had cancer decided and they survived it, decided, "I'm going to do that." Do we see that also with people who are the survivors of traumatic experiences such as terrorist events in Israel, Ziva?
Absolutely. People come to understand and appreciate their existence in the world. What's important in life? Is it important that the mail was late or that I didn't pay a check? Or is it important that my children are around me, that my children are happy, that they're smiling? What is important in my life, not what is trivial, what is meaningful, what is really important?
Okay, you talked about this idea of finding the silver lining. It seems really hard for me that having suffered such a trauma should say, you know, there was really some good that came out of this. Could you explain that, please, Ziva?
Yes, through seeing what had happened to themselves through their grief, seeing that other people didn't understand other people crossed the street to ignore them, who didn't know how to react. They understood from within themselves how important it was to help other people, to help others who were going through similar experiences, to educate other people and raise awareness about how to deal with them, how to help them. It was healing for them to go through, to do something for other people, to be altruistic, to move forward. In the beginning, after the loss of a loved one or after their own experiences, there's a rush to just keep busy, to keep doing things, just to remember the person. But after a while, it became, how can we turn that into a legacy? How can we remember the person for who they were? Creating organizations, creating helping.
Okay, understood. Have you been in contact with any of the people you interviewed in the last week or so with incidents, with occurrences that are happening in Israel now?
I was in Israel for a month. I just came home on July 3rd. So I was there at the time of the kidnappings and then the horrific killing of the Palestinian boy. I met with 12 of the people who were in the book during that time period. And just, you know, was there just to see the understanding of other people suffering,
Did you see any like reoccurrences when things were happening that suddenly people are flashing back or they're withdrawing and they're reliving their own experience?
I saw the understanding, the compassion, the how important it is for them to continue to share their stories so people understand.
Okay. Now, you mentioned there's a story here. We usually think of association with people of the Second Intifada and suicide bombers. That it was a target against Israelis, but you have a story of an Arab woman who happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and when a bomb went off, she was there right in the middle of things, and she survived it. And her trauma is no less real than anybody else's. Could you explain?
Yes. I mean, she was an innocent victim at the time of an attack, and also then experienced a personal attack because she was an Arab woman, and people in the area, you know, were pointing at her and saying, you know, RAV, and here this is a woman who was a minute before that their peer. She was going shopping. She was standing there next to the bus stop. So she had to deal with all of a sudden being a target.
Mm-hmm. Were there,
as well as being, you know, an innocent bystander, mm-hmm. an innocent victim.
How did you come to find her?
Through one of the trauma professionals, I think she was a social worker.
Uh-huh.
She worked with Jewish population. She worked with Arabs. She was an Israeli, an Arab-Israeli, living her life.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Was she offered and afforded the same kind of treatment and care as the Jews were?
Yes.
Unequivocally. Yes. That was the quickest answer you've given yet, Ziv.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Now, a twofold question. Aside answering, the first question should not be answered to everybody, but when you wrote the book, for whom did you have it in mind? And what do you want people to come away with once they finish reading, they're done reading, Living Beyond Terrorism, Ziva Kornweiser?
The book was first and foremost a gift to the people who shared their stories. It was so they would have it for themselves, for their family, as a legacy to them. That was my gift. Then the second piece was my message to build awareness so that other people would understand what it means to create a situation where somebody is so horribly attacked, but also then the strength of these people to grow, the strength to cope with the situation, to, as I said, to move alongside of it. And that's, for me, that message is really important, so that people can learn in their own lives how to respond if something happens to them, if something happens to their loved one. And then lastly, it was really to build empirical evidence or to collect evidence so that we can bring that forward for advocacy and policy changes, that people know what the impact is, that it's documented, that it's there. And in that way, to try to make a difference.
That's awesome. Very awesome. Okay. Our guest has been Ziva Kornweiser, who has written the book Living Beyond Terrorism, Israeli Stories of Hope and Healing. It is published by Geffen Publishing House. We want to thank you so much for sharing some of your insights into this, and we should hopefully hear good news.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Hey, Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We have, coming up next, is the Maccabees. One Day More is the name from their most recent CD album, whatever you call things, what people listen to now. I don't know what you'd call it. And we're doing it, it's a cappella, of course, because we are in 3 weeks between the 17th of Tammuz and the 9th of Av, which is a traditional period of mourning for Jews commemorating the destruction of both temples and other things. And we'll talk about this in the ensuing weeks. So let's just listen in.
אחינו כל דייס ישראל הנשונים בצרה ובשביה העומדים בין בים ובין ביבשה אחינו כל דייס ישראל הנשונים בצרה ובשביה העומדים בין בים
Of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Listen to the Jewish Hour. People ask me why I don't play any a cappella klezmer music. And I guess you kind of say that it'd be an oxymoron because the word klezmer, we had somebody on a couple of years ago, defined that the word klezmer comes from the Hebrew words klezmer, which means instruments. So if you're going to have klezmer music, you have to have instruments. And we don't listen to instrumental music. We just listen to a cappella music. So we have now, this has become actually classic a cappella. This is Cole Zimra. We stand as one, and it's a theme against terrorism.
How can life go on this way? Our holy land of Israel, how much grief can you sustain? We search for words of courage to help us ease the pain. Be brave, be strong, we're standing proud. Be brave, be strong, we sing out.
our prayer to see shalom. Be brave, be strong, we stand as one, we will go on. Be brave, be strong, we stand as one, we will go on.
Our home away from home, the place we hold so dear. Our brother seeking comfort and strength to persevere.
We're a nation of survivors, one family filled with pride.
Oh, land of milk and honey, we will always stand.
Stand by our side.
Yes, we will. Be brave, be strong.
We stand as one.
Be brave, be strong. For the land of Zion, be brave, be strong.
We will go on.
One heart, one soul.
Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Listening to the Jewish Hour, we've got a couple of PSAs. The Jewish Federation of Metro Detroit is having an evening, Detroit Stands with Israel, an evening of solidarity, Wednesday, July 23rd, 7:30 p.m., Shaarei Tzedek Synagogue, Congregation Shaarei Tzedek, which is on Bell Road and 11 Mile. For security purposes, no bags larger than 12 by 12 are permitted into the event. And it's not a fundraiser. It's to hear the what's doing in Israel. We beat you to it because we had it on last week already. And second, this is another one, Operation Challah. For our Metro Detroit ladies, in memory of Naftali Frankel, Gilad Shoir, and Ayel Yifrach, may their eternal legacy keep us united, a step-by-step, hands-on challah experience. That's making challah bread. Thursday, July 31st, at the Max Fisher Building on Telegraph Road, south of Maple, 6:30 registration, 7 p.m. sharp. Register now. $18 includes all supplies, sponsorships available, volunteers welcome, guest speakers, learn the practical and mystical ingredients of challah making and blessings, make and take challah home for your Shabbat, and all proceeds will be sent directly to the Frankel, Sher, and Yifrach families. For more information, contact Detroit Challah Hotline. I didn't know there was such a thing. At 248-821-3103. Again, that's 248-821-3103. 3103, and it's 7 o'clock on Thursday the 31st. Your organization having a function, a thing, a something, a happening? Send it to me, rabbifinman.com, and we will announce it because we're here to serve the public. Up next, our final song for the day. This is Barry Weber. He just came out with this right. We got it right after Sephira, right after Pesach, after Shavuos, rather. It's called Chabad Kapella. It's a Chabad song, sung a cappella, and it's just for you. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herr Schulfenman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week's Parsha is the Parsha of Maasai. It can be found in the book of Numbers, let's say chapter 33 and follows. I don't have a book in front of me, but I think that's about where it is. And it goes to the end of the book of Numbers, so you can start at the end and work backwards if you want. It is also the right in the middle of the 3 weeks, and which we are commemorating all the different horrible things that happened to the Jewish people. One of the things that is mentioned in this portion, a little bit of a unusual, strange, sort of out of character type of thing. A couple weeks ago, the land of Israel was divided up among all the families of Israel, and it all went according to patrilineal descent, meaning father to son, father to son, and if you happen to be a girl, well, you got to live with your husband. First you got to live with your father, and then you got to live with your husband. And then, as it happened, there was one person by the name of Tzlufchod. Sounds like a Muppets character. Tzlufchod, who had five daughters, no sons. They complained. They wanted a portion of the land. God said, give them a portion in the land. Comes along now in this week's portion, their cousins, with a complaint. You know, it's still going father to son, father to son, father to son. There's no provision for it to go daughter to son. You've created a provision for it to go father to daughter, but you didn't create a provision for it to go grandfather to grandson, meaning to say, if you give it to our cousins, these women who will marry somebody from a different tribe, then their children will inherit it, but their children will be from different tribes. And what we'll have is these little like enclaves, these little Hamtramcks in our land. And we don't want little Hamtramcks. Nothing against Hamtramck. It's a nice place. I visited it many times. But why isn't it Detroit? I mean, it's totally and completely surrounded by Detroit. Highland Park even makes less sense to me. But listen, I'm not involved with politics or demography or socioeconomic occurrences over here in this city. They didn't want their land to be diminished, basically what it's going to be, because this generation it would be from the tribe of Shimon and in Menashe, and in future generations it was going to be some other tribe. So Moshe, being the quintessential diplomat, went back to the Almighty. My Almighty said, I got just the solution. The daughters of Tzlufchod should marry their cousins. And not only that, everybody has to marry within the tribe so that the tribes maintain their integrity. And you don't get little pieces of land going off to other tribes. That's the solution. Okay, and this went on for a couple generations until one of the things that we celebrate Tu B'Av, which it says there's no greater holiday on the Jewish calendar than Yom Kippur and Tu B'Av. One of the things that's celebrated over there is that Jews were allowed to marry intertribal, which is about as intermarrying as Judaism allows. So if you're Reubenite, yes, according to Halacha, you can marry somebody from the tribe of Levite or Shimon or Joseph or wherever, and vice versa, and all of those three and all the different 12 combinations thereof. Feel free. What do we learn from this? It sounds kind of sort of, when you think about it, it's like this is family feuding. This is squabbling. This could be borderline petty. And we're reading this now in the week prior to Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is a week and change. It's a week from Tuesday. It's the first temple was destroyed. Because you look through the books of Kings, and then Jeremiah and Isaiah, and you'll see that Jews weren't acting very Jewish. And that's why the first temple was destroyed. Idolatry, adultery, murder, this kind of stuff. The second temple, which its destruction is described in the Talmud, because the Bible's already closed at that point, is based on sinas chinam, people not getting along one with the other. And here it is that it seems as though people were really worried about their turf, which is sort of like the same thing that would get the temple destroyed. But it goes beyond that. The land of Israel is precious. It's called Eretz Tzvi, which means this a land of splendor. It's also similar. The word Tzvi is related to the word princess. It's a very delicate land. And it says all over the Bible, if you don't behave properly, the land's going to vomit you out. Like a delicate princess has eaten something that's too coarse for it. Her would vomit that out as well. Pardon my graphics as you're sitting there eating a bagel. And the land of Israel is this precious land. that we want to have it maintain its integrity. We want it to be the way that it's supposed to be. We want it to have the people who are supposed to be living on it, living on it. And that holds true today. And again, let's turn it and make it personal. Our bodies are also called the land of Israel. And we could give little portions of it up here and there, and that would be awful. We have to realize that our focus has to be to using the land of Israel, using our personal lands of Israel, as our vehicles for serving God to the best of our ability. I could talk about this more, but we're running out of time. Got to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back with the story. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard from the Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Hey, Shulton here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? www.rabbifinman.com. You'll find right on the homepage, contact us link, make it easy for you. You click on the contact link, you contact me, I contact you, and we live happily ever after. It's that simple. What else do you find on rabbifinman.com? You'll have archived editions of the show. We'll have, did you want to hear what the Consul General from Israel had to say about what's going on? We had her on last week. Go rabbifinman.com. It was a great interview, if I do say so myself. We also have the E-Parsha, the U-Parsha, the Hasidic U-Story, or various different media in which yours truly conveys insights into the portion of the week in Hasidic stories in an educational and hopefully entertaining way. You'll also find the classes page where we have a class. I've been teaching a Tanya class now since 2009. And I'm in the process of, the first couple of classes are missing, and I'm in the process of finding them and getting them uploaded so that we'll be complete. And sometime probably within the next year and a half, the entire Tanya will be online for your listening pleasure. Check it out. Let me know. And there is, of course, the very important donations page. It is, what's today's, I don't even know what it is. It's June the 20th. July the 20th, excuse me. We just paid for June. Thank you very much. We needed those. Keep those cards and letters coming, folks. And July the 20th, we just paid for June. So now we got July to worry about. And hopefully you guys will come through. You've been doing it every month for 18 years. And I'm really proud of you, folks. It's just like amazing. It just seems like sometimes I have to take a deep breath, like, you know, to be able to pay 20 days late, which is not terrible. I mean, you know, nobody's yelling at me here at the station, where's the money, Finman? But let's go to it. If you've done it before, we appreciate it. Let's do it again. If you've never done it, go to the computer, see how easy it is. RabbiFinman.com, click on donations, pick a number, fill in your own number, click donate. It goes right through PayPal, right from your account to my account. Everybody is happy. You're happy because you've received a charitable donation. And you'll know that Detroit's only Jewish radio program on the air for 18 years will continue. Let's talk about the Or HaChaim, Reb Chaim Ibn Attar, who was known as the Or HaChaim, wrote a classic commentary on the five books of Moses, on the Chumash, passed away on the 15th of Tammuz, that's last week. He was one of these people that he lived in like both worlds. He was very, very grounded. Some people just don't have their feet long enough to touch the ground. They're just like out of this world. No, he was an amazing person. He had his feet on the ground, and he had his head in the clouds. It once happened that the Sultan of Morocco, he lived in Morocco in a place called Menken, and the Sultan traveled from Casablanca to this hometown and left his viceroy in charge. The viceroy hated Jews, and he made up some kind of a plot against them and was going to incite a riot against the Jewish community. And it didn't really look good for the Jewish community of Casablanca. So the Orach Chaim requested an audience with the Sultan and was told no. And he said, I have a very special birthday present that I want to give to the Sultan sometime around his birthday. So they finally said, okay, fine. So he presented him a mirror, one of these pocket compact mirrors. And he said, this is a special mirror. Look in the mirror and tell me what you see. And in the mirror, he saw his viceroy, his second in command, sitting on his throne, not the viceroy's throne, his throne, the Sultan's throne, and acting with all kinds of pomp and circumstance like he's running a joint. Put the Sultan in a state of fury. He packed up his bags, went and had the Sultan killed, and the Jews lived happily ever after. Sorry about the vizier, though. Anyway, that'll do it for the show. I'm going to thank you so much for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week, and we hope to see you back again next week. Take care. Zaru,